In a world full of distractions, there is one big question on every dog owner's lips.
How do I become more than just the person holding the other end of the leash?
We all get dogs with a dream in mind, a vision of the future. And if right now your everyday reality isn't quite that picture you had in mind, you are in the right place.
It really doesn't have to be this way.
You absolutely can and will be more to your dog than just the person who gets in between them and the world.
The key is, you need to be more sexy.
More sexy than the neighbourhood cat.
More sexy than the jogger in the park.
More sexy than that half-eaten hamburger they just found on the floor.
And yes, even more sexy than the dog across the road.
I'm Tom.
And I'm Lauren.
Together we're Absolute Dogs.
And you're listening to the Sexier Than a Squirrel podcast.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Sexier Than a Squirrel podcast, and it's a special one.
It's such a special one. I worked it out, Tom. We have over 37 years, when I started to think about it, 37 years, I hope not more of them mine and yours, but anyway, 37 years of experience of this topic combined. So 37 years combined experience. And I don't know if you want
this
to tell people.
It is the Border Collie episode, and we're going to go bigger than the Border Collie even, and we're going to be talking about herding type dogs in general, what makes them great, some common struggles that they might have, and really how you can unlock the potential of herding type dogs.
Because we know that they can be seriously frustrating, they can be equally brilliant, they are smart, they're genius, they are, for me, so beautiful. It's actually insanely, I mean, I'm absolutely addicted to the Border Collie and the herding breeds. And yet, for so many people, they struggle, right, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely. And we thought there was no better way to kick off the herding breed episode than go for a herding game changer win.
Yeah.
So we have Vanetta, who says that today I was sexier than ducks.
Wow.
My dog saw for the first time ever in a new park full of people and other dogs. What?
That
I asked him
mad.
To sit every time a stranger or a dog on lead walked past us, and he actually did it. I love that. Well done. So, as you probably gathered from that win, that is a big win, because that environment involved a lot of movement, it involved a lot of stuff happening, and the key thing to understand with a herding type dog, and you'll hear us reference Border Collie a lot, because you know we have Border Collies, so that's kind of the breed that springs to mind first and foremost, but they've been bred for many generations, and they're almost like this honed and finely tuned weapon that has a very clear job, right, Lauren?
Absolutely. You know what? They are, in the right hands, the most beautiful, I think authentic in so many ways breed. They're just as, I love them. I absolutely cannot speak highly enough about the Border Collie, and yet in the wrong hands, wow, we can end up with like the urban sheepdog, actually a completely, it feels like you have like a complete pest on the end of the lead. Like they're trouble. They're trouble in the wrong hands, or they're trouble in hands where they just don't know what they're getting themselves into.
Yeah. And the cool thing, and this is cool for, you know, every single breed of dog, is that their history, their origin, what was selected for many generations. And that isn't necessarily the world that they live in. So what you have is a dog with a blueprint of the world, a genetic blueprint of the world that does not match the reality. And so when there's that mismatch, that's when you get behavior struggles.
Absolutely. Now, absolutely. The behavior struggles, right? And when we say behavior struggles, Tom, often these Border Collies have, I don't know, let's call them behavior problems. But actually, so often you and I both say this a lot. Actually, what is a behavior problem really is just a Border Collie's behavior, right? And that becomes a behavior problem because of the environment and the place they find themselves in, which actually they were never meant to be adapted to living in. I don't know, a high-rise flat or in the middle of I can think about my own experience here. So this is not us being judgy. We're not judgy trainers. This is us saying we know this. I lived in Exeter. I was a student at Exeter University studying law, and I had my Border Collie with me. And you know what? I faced some struggles. I did face car chasing. I did face a dog who didn't like men approaching. I did face all of the things that a Border Collie is and does and feels. And I experienced all of them not understanding them. And I think when we look at that, they were not behavior problems in the environment that she'd come from. They were behavior problems by putting her into the urban sheepdog position.
You've literally just triggered me to think about something that I've never actually really thought about and truly appreciated. Thinking about one of my very first dogs was a Border Collie cross, Jack Russell. And that dog started life on a farm and lived on a farm for a number of years, then moved to like a normal kind of suburban housing estate. Then I went to university and she came with me and she lived on the main street in the centre of Bristol. And then she moved back out to the countryside for the final few years of her life. And she lived till she was 17, 18 years old. And she'd been in some crazy variety of environments. So what we're saying here is that, you know, that sure, there is this mismatch between the genetic blueprint and the reality that they live in. But the cool thing is that in game changer land, we can reshape the brain, right? We can acknowledge the strengths and weaknesses of that brain and that personality and that blueprint that they have of the world. And we can shape it and mold it. There really is a game for that.
That was exactly the word I was thinking, Tom. It's mold. It's kind of like Play-Doh or like a plasticine model that you can change it. And I think that's the big thing, that back in the day when I was like rocking at university with Poppy and my first Border Collie, Bella, you know what? It was a different place. I was like, this is what they are. They've been labeled as this, and they are reactive, and Bella, for example, just very typical Border Collie with a very strong eye. A lot of that eye stalk sort of behavior, all of that sort of behavior chain and pattern that she had, it was beautiful in so many ways. It just didn't fit the environment she found herself in. She didn't choose to come there. She found herself in this environment, and I believed that this was, and that was my limiting belief for sure. I believed that this was the way she was and the way she would always be, and that she didn't suit the environment. Because at the time, you're told by trainer after trainer after trainer, this is a Border Collie, and she is maybe aggressive, or maybe she's a car chaser. These are things she's going to do forever. These are what she does, right? That's that. And actually, there were so many things we could have changed or adapted or flexed. And the typical, you must walk her twice a day. You know what, putting her in that situation twice a day back then, I look at it now and I'm like, God, I would never have done it like that. So there's so many things we can do, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so what we wanted to do in this episode is we want to dive into what are the things that make a Border Collie great and a herding breed dog great? What makes for their strengths in the environments that they were designed for? And how that can then have an impact on the worlds that they live in today. So the first one that we're going to go for is that herding breed dogs, and we'll go with the Border Collie as an example, they've been created, designed, developed over many generations of careful breeding to be aware of novelty. Now, in the worlds that they were designed for, that's really useful because they can maybe spot that one of the sheep are moving, that they're moving a bit strange. And in fact, that sheep is lame. And that's something that we need to separate that sheep off for and effectively make their teammate, the farmer, aware of. Equally, it might be that they notice that a sheep is trying to leave the group, and that's novelty, and they can do something about it.
And then, so that they're meant to notice really subtle, fine,
tiny things.
Minutia of what's going on in that group. And sometimes we're talking groups of like thousands of sheep, right? Like when we've been, we should let you know that Tom and I have both in the last week been out there working with sheepdogs and sheep. And at the same time, we've also had many experiences, haven't we, Tom, at little herding games with our own dogs. But also, I mean, both of our dogs that I'm thinking now, taking them sheepdog training has been a big part of what we do, just to learn a bit more about the Border Collie and understand really really understand even more. And we notice that, right? Like Bet with a group of, I don't know, maybe 200 sheep and how it works. And then watching maybe a bigger group of sheep. What do you call them? A flock. Watching a bigger flock of sheep. When we're looking at like a flock, like actually like a few thousand, they're bred to look at minutiae, like tiny, tiny things, and understanding and reading that. And then we wonder why they, I don't know, get excited when the postman comes to the door or start lunging and barking at the sort of window. And we think, well, actually, this breed, they're meant to see little things.
Or even notice that dog over there is giving them a funny look, and they react to that dog. And we think, oh my gosh, they've just reacted to that dog for no reason. But what novelty have they noticed there?
Oh, Tom, I've got a brilliant story really quickly on this one. I remember being at an agility show. For those of you that don't know, I compete at agility at a reasonable level, and I absolutely love what we do. I love it. And I remember years back going down to the rings, because in the UK you walk to the ring. So the ring is where you compete. And I was walking to the ring, and I was walking to the ring with my border collie. And as I got closer to the ring, she literally started hackly and like worried and backing out of her harness and her lead. And I was like, what on earth is going on here? Like, this is weird. And then just as I came round the sort of bend, there was this dog under a vehicle really giving her the eye, like a really strong border collie eye. And that strong border collie eye is so powerful. And we were talking border collie to border collie here, and which is sometimes a great conversation and other times not. And they definitely my dog did not know like where to go with it. She's on a lead, so she's kind of like got less options. And the dog under the car was also tied to the vehicle, which I wouldn't suggest is a great move, but anyway, that's where the dog was. And so for me, it was like that moment of, she realized it probably 50 foot back from when I realized it. So she realized it so quick. And then the second one, I remember being, I was only young, maybe I don't know, 15, and I was up on the moorland with my mum and dad, and Bella, my first border collie, sat in the front of the vehicle. Yes, this is back in the day. Moved sheep without even getting out of the vehicle. Just in the vehicle, her eye could move groups of sheep very easily. She had such a strong eye. And so even just her intensity of her eye from a vehicle, like literally parked up, I think we're having like hot chocolate on the moors, and she was eyeing them up. So what we're saying, I suppose, is like, that's so inherited. It's so in there, and it's a strong behavior.
And so when an animal, like if we imagine two dogs, one goes through life being aware of very little, another goes through life being aware of everything, just by the nature of the fact that there's difference in awareness there. And I'm sure that some of you listening will be able to appreciate this within your own dog, that actually their awareness is higher than other dogs. So there's more opportunity to react to things. And this is something that's really interesting, that firstly, they're aware, much more aware of novelty, and that's how they've been designed, which can work to their disadvantage at times. But secondly, just thinking about the socialization period, this whole idea of a socialization period. And if you've not yet checked out the socialization episode of the podcast, then do so, because we go into a lot of depth on it there. But what we've got to think is, they've had many generations whereby they're born on a farm, and the idea is that they're born in the environment in which they stay. So they're born on the farm, and they eventually go on to be an adult on the farm.
And often
that is their job.
They live, Tom, in, like, so let's be, we've done quite a few visits to brilliant sort of sheepdog trainers and farmers and herding experts. And their dogs live often in the, I don't know, agricultural barn or stable, or these places aren't necessarily where our dogs live. And yet that's where their dogs are brought up as puppies.
Yeah.
And they, like you said, they adapt to that lifestyle from that. That's where they know, right? And then when they move to their home, they move to another very similar set of circumstances, or they may just stay on that farm for life, because a lot of the farmers will breed their own for that situation, right?
Exactly. So that's exactly right. So then when you bring your border collie home, your new border collie puppy home to your kind of environment, you might have kind of read all the books saying, oh, you know, you've got to socialize them. Realistically, that socialization period has been selected for being much earlier and much shorter, because the border collie realistically has had very little use of a socialization period because they are born in the environment in which they stay. So this paired with this awareness of novelty and this acknowledgement of novelty, you can see how many herding type dogs, and equally, you know, you don't have to be a herding type dog to be have all the strengths and weaknesses of a herding type dog. You can see how they develop their struggles.
And that's exactly what it is. It becomes a struggle, and yet actually it's really what they've always been, what they've always been bred to do, what they've always been associated with. So let's think about where we are right now, Tom. So I own, I definitely adore my border collies. We do agility. And actually, how do I get them to a place that is comfortable? Because that's something we're both really good at now. I feel like we're the experts of the border collie. I genuinely feel like when I'm working with a border collie, I feel like the analogy I would give is I'm in my comfy pair of slippers. Like, yeah. For me, it's so comfortable. Whether I pick up a whip, for some of you that don't know what we do, it's a game. So whether I'm picking
and
up a whip,
it doesn't involve hitting the dog.
And it does not involve anything. It's a nice thing. It's a good thing. I'm going to move on swiftly from this topic. And whether I'm playing sort of whippet games and or sheep herding games or like sheep ball games or any of those sorts of things, I feel like a real expert, and I feel I'm in my comfy slippers. Whereas we've had a dog stay here with some training, and a big breed, and I feel so out of my comfort zone, Tom. Like, I feel it's so different. So they're definitely different in their movements, they're different in their brain, they're different in how they work. And like you, for example, I know, Tom, are exactly the same. In a border collie, yes, we love all breeds and we work very well with many breeds, and our training goes across all breeds for sure. However, I would definitely say my comfy slippers versus my stilettos would be, I don't know, comfy slippers would be a border collie, my stilettos would be a dog de Bordeaux. I love dog de Bordeaux. I've just never really had many to train.
Yeah. Or like a Great Dane or something.
Oh, you know what? You know what, Tom? I haven't ever told you this. I strutted in many rings with Great Danes. They were called, back in the day, Maple Mead Great Danes, and I qualified for the Crufts Juniors with a big Great Dane, actually.
A little Great Dane. I was smaller.
They're big dogs. But yeah, no, I have a background, a history.
There we go. Yeah, that's your next dog. So in terms of what we need to do, one of the pillars of how we would work with these types of dogs would be actually to teach them not that, you know, black dogs are good, not that, you know, Dalmatians are good, not that a man with a backpack is good, not be so specific and prescriptive, but instead we would teach them novelty is a good thing. Hey, I spot that novelty over there. Here's some of your daily food allowance so that you see that it has a positive outcome, because the awareness is there. And we almost have to step into their world and start acknowledging novelty as well. And I think that's where, well, you know, where Lauren's saying that this is like a comfort zone. I think border collies are the biggest, they grow you as a trainer and as an owner. Because all of a sudden you step into a world where you really appreciate the amount that dogs have to process. And this, and to be honest, I bet a lot of you listening are thinking, my dog is not a border collie. He is not a classically marked, you know, black and white with a white stripe up the head border collie. In fact, maybe he's got a curly coat and he's orange or something. But you are describing my dog. And that's exactly it. That actually the dogs that are super aware of novelty, we have to step up for them, and we have to notice all the stuff that they're processing and then back them up with saying, hey, I see that over there. Here is a positive outcome in the form of your daily food allowance. And that's kind of makes me a bit giddy as a trainer to think that, you know, that they actually push us and we've got to step up for them. I think a lot of training relies on the dog coming to you, whereas actually great training happens by you meeting the dog halfway and you're going somewhere as a team.
And I think that's like such an important thing, Tom, to recognize. Like, I've obviously, lots of you know Little Blink. She's an amazing little dog. And when I first brought her home, she was a rehome dog. So she'd come from another set of circumstances. Nobody had ever been bad to Blink, but she hadn't necessarily seen what we would show our dogs in the sense of dog shows and noises. And because she'd come from a gun dog background, very, very different set of circumstances. And not bad, not good, just, I mean, to be fair, she was a fun, loved dog. But what I'm saying is she was worried about show environments. She was worried about show environments. Why? Because they were so different for her. So actually, the same set of skills we use in that, in what we're working for, because she was just very, very vigilant in those environments. And then the other thing with Blink is, I've learned so much through border collies about eye stalk and behavior patterns and chains. And I absolutely know when Blink stalks, she has a really strong eye stalk and she has very little want to take any sort of grab, bite or nip. Like, she doesn't have any of that part of the chain. So when I'm working in agility with Blink, I really need to think cleverly to get the best speed out of her. Some of you might have seen we won at Crufts this year. We've had some fantastic results in terms of agility. World Championships, our top result, we came fourth. And literally, I mean, she's an amazing, amazing dog for a very small dog. And yet those are often decisions I'm making on what I've learned through border collies and herding breeds, because Blink has an eye stalk. She struggles to behave. When I say behave, she struggles to operate when she's in that behavior sort of state. So I think it's a really interesting thing to look at, because a lot of these skills are transferable. Whilst we're talking on our love of the border collie, we actually mean, this is so transferable.
I can't help but comment on other breeds. So sometimes I'll be like doing a behavior consult before like a Bichon Frise or something like that. And I will have to tell the owner that they think they have a Bichon Frise, but this is a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Absolutely.
So on that, guys, the next thing that we want to, that we really want to highlight as being really kind of characteristic of herding type dogs. And we'll be honest, you know, if you've got a herding dog that isn't like this, the next thing that we're going to say, then you do have a dud, and that's fine also, but
Tom,
they're not
Tom,
doing
just,
what they're
just
meant.
Remember, this is a podcast and people are listening because they like us, Tom.
It just goes against everything that a herding breed is. Otherwise.
They are a dud.
And so
you got a faulty one, basically, is what Tom's saying.
Yeah,
you got a faulty one.
Malfunctioning.
So I'll give you an example of that. I have classic. I think the breed is meant to work cows, Tom. Just double checking.
Yeah.
She is petrified, petrified of anything like sort of anything cattle, sheep. She really would never go anywhere near them. It was novelty that she would never anticipate to go near. She has absolutely zero instincts to work with them. However, she really does quite like the chickens. I'll tell you, our new chickens at home. For those of you that are chicken lovers out there, we are definitely part of that family. And she loves those chickens, and she definitely would work them if we were to give her some sort of license to do that, or ducks, I'm sure of it. So what we're saying is, yes, it's faulty, right? Like, they should do it, right? It's you got yourself, like Tom said so eloquently, a dud.
And so that skill is, that next concept is that movement stimulates them. Movement adds to their bucket. And the interesting thing is when we think about movement on a big level, we think about, oh, you know, it makes sense that my herding dog gets very excited when another dog is chasing their frisbee, because that's movement. But then what about all the little movements that are happening every day where you say, I don't know, you get up off the sofa and you go and you make yourself a coffee, right? That movement for a herding type dog fills their bucket to a lesser or greater extent. And so what we've got a situation of is some of it, you know, it's what they're meant to do, but we see dogs where it stimulates them to an extent where actually it's quite inappropriate and it causes them to have some struggles.
And that's the big thing, right? It's the struggles that kind of highlight where we are, right, Tom? Like, when it's all going okay, then everyone's like, I don't know, the word would be hunky-dory. But it's the struggles that kind of make us sort of really realise, yeah, actually, we need to look a bit harder, right?
Yeah. And so the way that we work with dogs in terms of getting them, making them kind of happy in terms of the life that they live in and the worlds that they live in nowadays, there's almost two sides to the coin of working with a dog that's stimulated by movement. The first side is to actually say, well, how about movement doesn't stimulate you quite so much? How about when movement happens in the environment, much like we talked about with novelty, I acknowledge that it's happened. I'm now aware of it. It's a little bit like a mindfulness exercise for the owners. And now I'm going to follow it up with a calm outcome of maybe some of your daily food allowance. And
that's the thing, right? It's a calm outcome. I think that's just worth highlighting really quickly, Tom. Like, so many people forget, what is the outcome we actually want from that situation?
Calmness creates great behavior. So if you need to pick an emotion, calmness is the one to pick, right? And so that's one side of the coin. And then the other side is actually to say, well, sometimes life is exciting and sometimes life is really movement based, and it's fine to be stimulated by that, but actually I need you to also control yourself in that moment and not chase and not stalk and maybe be able to disengage. And that's where there's a game for that. That's where, you know, there are so many games. Talk about it extensively in the training academy. We're going to talk about it extensively in some upcoming teaching that we're doing that we'll tell you about at the end.
Oh my God.
It's exciting. and so, You start to again, it's coming back to that idea of you're working as a team. You're acknowledging that there's two prongs of attack here, and you're asking your dog to meet you halfway, and that you're saying, right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to teach you that movement around you isn't something to be super excited about, but I need you to meet me halfway. And if ever you are excited about it, I need you to be able to control yourself. And that's going to be the formula for a happy life.
And I think that's the big thing. It's a happy life for our dogs, but equally it's a happy life for us. So I went out on a bike this week. It's a novel experience for me, but I have to say I quite like it, really. It's something I do quite enjoy now. And when I say a bike, I mean like a bicycle, like a riding bicycle. Anyway, I took the Border Collies with me. So I took the Border Collies, and yet years ago I would never have done that because, number one, I wouldn't have necessarily known how to manage them in a small space past other dogs. And I know that sounds crazy, but 15 years ago that would make me feel uncomfortable. On a bridle path, you're driving or riding rather into something. I wouldn't have felt comfortable to know they were going to not do anything silly like nip or herd or bark or lunge or worry. And now I have behaviors and skills and tips, tricks, and different things that we do that I just know I'm never going to have an issue there. And that, Tom, I have to say, that's the most comforting feeling to know.
Yeah.
We both know it. We walked on the moors only at a big distance,
yeah.
only a few days ago. And we were out with, just took two of our dogs, and it's bliss. We don't even think about leads. We just enjoy, we were in a safe space, and we enjoy the fact that our dogs hang out. And I think we now know the tips and tricks. And I bet everybody out there wants to know those too, because those are the things that have made owning Border Collies for me a bit of a doddle, to be honest. Like I said, comfy slippers.
Yeah, it's quite funny, actually. On that walk, something very novel happened whereby someone stood up from behind a mound on the moors, and it took the novelty took me by surprise, and I was like, oh my God. And yet the dogs were not bothered. Okay,
fearless.
I need to practice. Need to do this. There must be a game for that.
DMT Tom.
So that's the kind of second pillar. And the third and final pillar that we want to kind of introduce you to, because we could talk all day on this, but we want to really give you something that you can start to think about in your own dog, start to work on in your own dog. So the third one is that these herding dogs, they have been bred for many generations to collect things, right? So to keep things all together. And the thing is, that isn't something that is like a behavior that is the mother dog says to her children before they leave home at 8 weeks old, Border Collies, here is what you must do. You must collect things and keep things together. That isn't actually
such a nice picture though, Tom. Like,
I love the idea. Yeah.
I'm thinking fly from Babe. What happens.
That was what was in my head. But what actually happens is these dogs, these breeds, they've got a real struggle with disengagement. So they struggle to actually leave a situation. They struggle to not want to engage in a situation. So you'll know if your dog struggles with disengagement in that they're the ones that are likely, if they're excited or they're scared, they're likely to run up to it. If they're not sure about something over there, they'll stare at it and try and approach it. Right?
Really quick example, Tom, of a lady saying to me that she bought a Border Collie because she loved the Border Collie, but really did not like the way that Border Collies behaved around like stock and sheep. So she went to a house, Tom. She went to a house and she bought the dog from a house because she didn't want one of those farm types. So she was absolutely adamant. It was not a farmy type one she wanted. She wanted absolutely to have one that had come from a home. And so basically she came to me back in the day when I was working all out for like in-person dog training. And she had a dog who was attacking the washing machine constantly to the point that it had cracked the washing machine. literally banging itself into the washing machine, biting the washing machine. And also it had twice a potential runover situation where it had been attacking a tyre.
Oh my word.
Yeah, so as you can imagine, it kind of and she was absolutely shocked that she bought it from a house, so absolutely in no uncertain terms was it ever going to have any of these border collie behaviors, because it came from a house, she told me very adamantly.
But then she'd made one mistake. She didn't ask the mother dog not to teach the puppy
important
about
message.
This whole disengagement thing. We joked, but it's really important that to understand that this isn't a behavior. This is a personality trait that causes the behavior. And that's the distinction. And so this inability to disengage, or this struggle with disengagement, what that leads to is, let's say we've got a little flock of 10 sheep in front of us. If one of the sheep kind of trot off to the right, let's say, well, that border collie is engaging with the other sheep, but can't disengage from the sheep that's moving away from the flock. So what happens? Well, we've got to collect them back up again. And the interesting thing is that border collie and any dog that struggles with disengagement, they'll often show this collecting behavior in different contexts. For example, if you're at home, but you're in a different room and not near them, then they want to kind of be in that room with you or collect you up into the room that they're in. Or if there's two owners, this is a good little kind of fun little game to play on a walk. And so you've got two owners on a walk with a dog, and one of the owners decides to walk around the perimeter of the field while the other owner just tries to walk straight across the field. See how the dog reacts. And dogs that really struggle with disengagement, they can often get the urge to, like, they can't disengage from the owner who's left, and they want to collect, and they get a bit conflicted about it. And this personality trait that leads to what is a behavior that has meant that they've done a job very, very well in the past, and in today's world they might have some struggles.
And I think that's the big thing, it's actually understanding. So now I understand, when we go on a bike ride, that we don't put our dogs in that conflicted position, that
exactly.
Matt goes, I don't know, miles ahead and opens the gate like the gentleman he is, and then I am miles back and staying, I don't know, with Eliza, or like I did last time I went, got a puncture. So it's very, very slow. Indeed, Tom, you haven't seen all these adventures, so many adventures in the last few weeks. But that's the sort of situation that you don't want to put them in, because they actually don't enjoy it. So I think that we start to work out another example of a border collie being a border collie. I've got two. Reef as a puppy, Reef's an old boy now, he's about 13. And as a puppy, two things I caught him doing, which I thought were completely border collie. One was, we had dotty bedding. So these big spots, like big polka dots. And they're obviously a hairy, well, Reef's a long-haired dog. And I caught him pushing the hair between one dot to the next. So pushing the hair into a thing and then one dot to the next. That was one of his behaviors that I saw 13 years ago. The other one was pairing shoes. So he would actively try to pair shoes. So these are the sorts of things that if you've never owned a border collie, the border collies, and the other one was always running to the top of the stairs, dropping the ball down, running to the bottom of the stairs, grabbing the ball, running to the top of the stairs, dropping the ball down. And we don't have a stairway where that's remotely appropriate. And we don't tend to let them get into it anyway. However, it's such a border collie thing to do, right? Like it's celebrating the border collie, because those are the sorts of things that they get themselves into without you even realizing them. So we've seen it all, I think.
Yeah. And as we say, we're like massively passionate about herding type dogs. And to be honest, it sounds weird, but we're massively passionate about dogs with struggles, because if for every struggle, and I think this episode really highlights that, with every struggle, first of all, it's only a struggle in the environment that they currently find themselves in. But also with every struggle, there's an opportunity to really develop a big strength and really adapt them to the environment by molding and reshaping that brain. Now, that's exactly why we're doing something really cool that we've never done before, and we want to give you a heads up about it. And that is that we're doing an entire day's teaching, effectively deep dive into herding breeds and into the border collie and how we work with border collies and the games that we play to reshape their brain and turn their struggles into strengths. And you can find out more about that if you're listening to this kind of imminently, like live like we've just released the episode, then you can go to absolutedogs.me/collie to find out how you can get involved in that event. And if you're listening to this maybe a little bit later down the line, then you'll be able to find out about how you can watch it back and see everything that went on by going to absolute-dogs.com.
And this is absolutely the first time we have ever done this. It's a passion area for us. It's an area that we get to, we talk about this all the time. It's an important area, and by no way is it urgent. By no means is it urgent. We get to do this because we enjoy it. And that's absolutely where we're coming from here. So Border Collie Day is a thing. Understanding your urban sheepdog, or understanding why the herding breeds, or the crosses. You know what? I know many Border Collie crosses, or even many pro dog trainers or trainers worldwide that struggle with some of the things we face with these dogs in our groups and classes, and even just in life. So I'm very excited about this, Tom, like really excited.
It's exciting. So yeah, if you want to join us on that and take part in it, then all you've got to do is go to absolutedogs.me/collie and you will be able to hear all about it. Ooh. There. Now, that was the Border Collie episode of the Sexier Than a Squirrel podcast. You guys have got a lot to observe, a lot to focus on, a lot to kind of noticing your dog, and maybe, you know, notice some new avenues for transformation. We'll be seeing you next week for the next episode. And remember, stay sexy.
Hey, before you go, have you taken part in the worldwide Sexier Than a Squirrel Challenge?
It's a 25-day online video program. Huge energy, amazing community, and over 6,000 people are already taking part.
The only question is, you know where you are today, where do you want to be 25 days from now? Head to absolutedogs.me/sexy.